Star Wars, Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 4, side 1. If we all go together, they won't be able to fire. We'll head straight in as if we're going aboard. Then split off to the sides at the last second and take cover behind the ramp. Wedge and I can fire up and inside to keep them busy while you take the lightsaber and disable them.
I don't know, Han muttered. I think just Wedge and me should go.
No, it has to be all of us, Leia insisted. That's the only way to guarantee they won't shoot.
Han looked at Wedge. What do you think?
I think it's the best chance we're going to get, the other said. But if we do it, we'd better do it fast.
Yeah.
Han took a deep breath and handed Leia his blaster.
All right, give me the lightsaber.
Okay, ready?
Go.
He ducked out from cover and charged for the ship, crouching down as he ran to avoid the blaster fire crisscrossing the crater. The other Republic reps, Leia noted as she and Wedge followed, doing a good job of keeping the rim attackers busy. Inside the ship, she could see a hint of movement, and she gripped Han's blaster a little tighter. A half second in the lead, Han reached the ramp, and swerving suddenly to the side, ducked under the hull. The aliens must have realized instantly that their trap had failed. Even as Leia and Wedge skidded to a halt at opposite sides of the ramp, they were greeted by a burst of blaster fire from the open hatch. Dropping to the ground, Leia squirmed as far back as she could under the ramp, firing blindly into the hatch to discourage those inside from coming down after them. Across the ramp, Wedge was also firing. Somewhere behind her, she could hear a faint scrabbling across the ground as Han got into position for whatever sabotage he was planning. A shot blazed past from above, narrowly missing her left shoulder, and she tried to back a little farther into the ramp's shadow. Behind her, clearly audible through the blaster fire, she heard a snap, hiss, as Han ignited her lightsaber. Gritting her teeth, she braced herself, not knowing quite why. And with a blast and shockwave that knocked her flat against the ground, the whole ship bounced a meter in the air and then slammed back down again. Through the ringing in her ears, she heard someone give a war whoop. The firing from the hatch had abruptly stopped, and in the silence, she could hear a strange hissing roar coming from above her. Cautiously, she eased away from the ramp and crawled a little ways out of concealment. She'd been prepared to see the freighter leaking something as a result of Han's sabotage. She wasn't prepared for the huge, white, gaseous plume that was shooting skyward like the venting of a ruptured volcano. "You like it?" Han asked, easing over beside her and glancing up to admire his handiwork. "That probably depends on whether the ship's about to blow up," Leia countered. "What did you do?" "Cut through the coolant lines to the main drive," he told her, retrieving his blaster and handing back her lightsaber. "That's all their pressurized core phase gas floating away." "I thought coolant gases were dangerous to breathe," Leia said, looking warily at the billowing cloud. "They are," Han agreed. "But core phase is lighter than air, so we won't have any trouble down here. Inside the ship is another matter, I hope." Abruptly, Leia became aware of the silence around them. "They've stopped shooting," she said. Han listened. "You're right. Not just the ones inside the ship, either." "I wonder what they're up to," Leia murmured, tightening her grip on the lightsaber. A second later, she got her answer. A violent thunderclap came from above them, flattening her to the ground with a shockwave. For a horrifying second, she thought the aliens had set the ship to self-destruct. But the sound faded away, and the ramp beside her was still intact. "What was that?" "That, sweetheart," Han said, pulling himself to his feet, "was the sound of an escape pod being jettisoned."
He eased cautiously away from the relative protection of the ramp, scanning the sky. Probably modified for atmospheric maneuvering. Never realized before how loud those things were.
They usually take off in vacuum, Leia reminded him, standing up herself.
So, now what?
Now, Han pointed, we collect our escort and get out of here.
Our escort? Leia frowned. What
Her question was cut off by the roar of engines, as three X-wings shot overhead, wings in attack position and clearly primed for trouble. She looked up at the white tower of Corfe's gas and suddenly understood.
You did that deliberately, didn't you?
Well, sure, Han said, looking innocent. Why just disable a ship when you can disable it and send up a distress signal at the same time?
He gazed up at the cloud. You know, he said thoughtfully, sometimes I still amaze myself.
I can assure you, Captain Solo, Admiral Akbar's gravelly voice came over the Falcon speaker, that we are doing everything in our power to find out how this happened.
That's what you said 4 days ago, Han reminded him, trying hard to be civil.
It wasn't easy. He'd long since gotten used to being shot at himself, but having Leia under the hammer with him was something else entirely.
Come on, there can't be all that many people who knew we were coming to Bafash.
You might be surprised, Akbar said. Between the council members, their staffs, the prep crews at the spaceport, and various security and support personnel, there may be up to 200 people who had direct access to your itinerary. And that doesn't count friends and colleagues any of those 200 might have mentioned it to. Tracking through all of them is going to take time.
Han grimaced. That's great. May I ask what you suggest we do in the meantime?
You have your escort.
We had them 4 days ago, too, Han countered. It didn't do us a lot of good. Commander Antilles and Rogue Squadron are fine in a space battle, but this kind of stuff isn't exactly their area of expertise. We'd do better with Lieutenant Page and some of his commandos.
Unfortunately, they're all out on assignment, Akbar said. Under the circumstances, perhaps it would be best if you simply brought Counselor Organa Solo back here where she can be properly protected.
I'd love to, Han said.
The question is whether she'll be any safer on Coruscant than she is here.
There was a long moment of silence, and Han could imagine Akbar's huge eyes swiveling in their sockets.
I'm not sure I appreciate the tone of that question, Captain.
I don't much like it either, Admiral, Han told him. But face it, if the Imperials are getting information out of the palace, they might just as easily be able to get their agents in.
I think that highly unlikely, Akbar said, and there was no missing the frostiness in his tone. The security arrangements I've set up on Coruscant are quite capable of handling anything the Imperials might try.
I'm sure they are, Admiral, Han sighed. I only meant...
We'll let you know when we have further information, Captain, Akbar said. Until then, do whatever you feel is necessary. Coruscant out.
The faint hum of the carrier cut off.
Right, Han muttered under his breath. Bafash out, too.
For a minute, he just sat there in the Falcon's cockpit, thinking evil thoughts about politics in general and Akbar in particular. In front of him, the displays that normally monitored ship status were showing views of the landing field around them, with special emphasis on the areas just outside the hatch. The underside swivel blaster was extended and ready, the deflector shields set for hair trigger activation, despite the fact that the things weren't all that effective inside an atmosphere.
Han shook his head, a mixture of frustration and disgust in his mouth.
Who'd ever have thought, he marveled to himself, that the day would come when I was actually paranoid? From the rear of the cockpit came the sound of a soft footstep. Han turned, hand automatically dropping to his blaster.
It's just me, Leia assured him, coming forward and glancing at the displays.
She looked tired.
You finished talking with Akbar already?
It wasn't much of a conversation, Han told her sourly. I asked what they were doing to find out how our pals with the blasters knew we were coming here. He assured me they were doing everything possible to find out. I managed to step on his toes, and he signed off in a huff. Pretty much like usual with Akbar these days. Leia gave him a wry smile.
You do have a way with people, don't you?
This one's not my fault, Han objected. All I did was suggest that his security people might not be up to keeping these guys out of the Imperial Palace. He's the one who overreacted.
I know, Leia nodded, dropping wearily into the co-pilot's seat. For all his military genius, Akbar just doesn't have the polish to be a good politician. And with Thalia nipping at his heels,
she shrugged uncomfortably. He just gets more and more overprotective of his territory.
Yeah, well, if he's trying to keep Thalia away from the military, he's got the wrong end of the blaster, Han growled. Half of them are already convinced that Thalia's the guy to listen to.
Unfortunately, he often is, Leia conceded. Charisma and ambition, dangerous combination.
Han frowned. There had been something in her voice just then.
What do you mean, dangerous?
Nothing, she said, a guilty look flicking across her face.
Sorry, talking out of turn.
Leia, if you know something...
I don't know anything,
she said in a tone that warned him to drop it.
It's just a feeling I have, a sense that Thalia has his eye on more than just Akbar's job as Supreme Commander. But it's just a feeling.
Like the feeling she had that the Empire was up to something big.
Okay, he said soothingly. I understand.
So, you all done here?
As done as I can be, she said, the tiredness back in her voice. The rebuilding's going to take some time, but the organization for that will have to be handled from Coruscant.
She leaned back in her seat and closed her eyes.
Convoys of replacement equipment, consultants, and maybe extra workers. You know the sort of thing.
Yeah, Han said. And I suppose you're anxious to get right back and start the ball rolling.
She opened her eyes and gave him a curious look.
You sound like you're not.
Han gave the outside displays a thoughtful scan.
Well, it's what everyone's going to expect you to do, he pointed out. So maybe we ought to do something else.
Such as?
I don't know. Find somewhere no one would think to look for you, I guess.
And then? She asked, her voice ominous.
Unconsciously, Han braced himself. And then hole up there for a while.
You know I can't do that, she said, her tone just about what he'd expected. I have commitments back on Coruscant.
You've got commitments to yourself, too, he countered. Not to mention to the twins.
She glared at him.
That's not fair.
Isn't it?
She turned away from him, an unreadable expression on her face.
I can't be out of touch, Han, she said quietly. I just can't. There's too much happening back there for me to bury myself away.
Han gritted his teeth. They seem to be running over this same territory a lot lately.
Well, if all you need right now is to keep in touch, How about if we go someplace that has a diplomatic station? You'd at least be able to get official Coruscant news there.
And how do we make sure the local ambassador doesn't give us away?
She shook her head.
I can't believe I'm talking like this, she muttered. It's like we're back being the rebellion again, not the legitimate government.
Who says the ambassador has to know? Anne asked. We've got a diplomatic receiver on the Falcon. We can tap into the transmission on our own.
Only if we can get hold of the station's encrypt scheme, she reminded him, and then plug it into our receiver. That may not be possible.
We can find a way, Han insisted. At least it would buy Akbar some time to track down the leak.
True, Leia considered.
Slowly shook her head.
I don't know. The New Republic's encrypt codes are nearly impossible to break.
Han snorted.
I hate to disillusion you, sweetheart, but there are slicers running around loose who eat government encrypt codes for breakfast. All we have to do is find one of them.
And pay him enormous sums of money? Leia said dryly.
Something like that, Han agreed, thinking hard.
On the other hand, even slicers occasionally owe other people favors.
Oh?
Leia threw him a sideways look.
I don't suppose you know any of them.
As a matter of fact, I do.
Han pursed his lips.
Trouble is, if the Imperials have done their homework, they probably know all about it and have someone watching him.
Meaning?
Meaning we're going to have to find someone who's got his own list of slicer contacts. He reached over to the console and tapped the Falcon's comm switch.
Antilles, this is Solo. You copy?
Right here, General, Wedge's voice came back promptly.
We're leaving Bafash, Wedge, Han told him. That's not official yet. You're in charge of telling the rest of the delegation about it once we're off the ground.
I understand, Wedge said. You want me to assign you an escort, or would you rather slip out quietly? I've got a couple of people I'd trust all the way to the end of the galaxy.
Han sent Leia a lopsided smile.
Wedge understood all right.
Thanks, but we wouldn't want the rest of the delegation to feel unprotected.
Whatever you want, I can handle any need at this end. See you back at Corin.
Right. Han cut off the comm. Eventually, he added under his breath as he keyed for intercom.
Chewie, we ready to fly?
The Wookiee growled an affirmative.
Okay, make sure everything's bolted down and then come on up. Better bring 3PO, too. We might have to talk to Bafashi Control on the way out.
Do I get to know where we're going? Leia asked as he started the pre-launch sequence.
I already told you, Han said. We need to find someone we can trust who has his own list of illegals.
A suspicious glint came into her eye.
You don't mean Lando?
Who else? Han said innocently.
Upstanding citizen, former war hero, honest businessman.
Of course he'll have slicer contacts.
Leia rolled her eyes skyward.
Why, she murmured, do I suddenly have a bad feeling about this?
Chapter 11.
Hang on, R2, Luke called as the first gusts of atmospheric turbulence began to bounce the X-Wing around. We're coming in. Scanner is all working okay?
There was an affirmative twitter from the rear, the translation appearing across his computer scope.
Good, Luke said, and turned his attention back to the cloud-shrouded planet rushing up to meet them.
It was odd, he thought, how it had only been on that first trip into Dagobah that the sensors had so totally failed on approach.
Or perhaps not so odd. Perhaps that had been Yoda, deliberately suppressing his instruments so as to be able to guide him unsuspectingly to the proper landing site. And now Yoda was gone. Firmly, Luke put the thought out of his mind. Mourning the loss of a friend and teacher was both fitting and honorable, but to dwell unnecessarily on that loss was to give the past too much power over the present. The X-Wing dropped into the lower atmosphere, and within seconds was completely enveloped by thick white clouds. Luke watched the instruments, taking the approach slow and easy. The last time he'd come here, just before the Battle of Endor, he'd made the landing without incident. But just the same, he had no intention of pushing his luck. The landing sensors had Yoda's old homestead pinpointed now. R2, he called, find me a good level spot to set down, will you? In response, a red rectangle appeared on the forward scope, a ways east of the house, but within walking distance of it. Thanks, Luke told the droid, and keyed in the landing cycle. A moment later, with one last mad flurry of displaced tree branches, they were down. Slipping off his helmet, Luke popped the canopy. The rich odors of the Dagobah swamp flooded in on him, a strange combination of sweet and decay that sent 100 memories flashing through his mind. That slow twitch of Yoda's ears, the strange but tasty stew he'd often made, the way that wispy hair of his had tickled Luke's ears whenever he rode on Luke's back during training. The training itself, the long hours, the physical and mental fatigue, the gradually increasing sense of and confidence in the Force, the cave and its dark side images. The cave. Abruptly, Luke stood up in the cockpit, hand going reflexively to his lightsaber as he peered through the haze. Surely, he hadn't brought his X-Wing down by the cave. He had. There, no more than 50 meters away, was the tree that grew from just above that evil place, its huge, blackened shape jutting upward through the surrounding trees. Beneath and between its tangled roots, just visible through the mists and shorter vegetation, he could see the dark entrance to the cave itself. Wonderful, he muttered. Just wonderful. From behind him came an interrogative set of beeps. Never mind, R2, he called over his shoulder, dropping his helmet back onto the seat. It's all right. Why don't you stay here and I'll... The X-Wing rocked just a bit, and he looked back to find R2 already out of his socket and working his way gingerly forward. Or if you'd rather, you can come along, he added wryly. R2 beeped again. Not a cheerful beep exactly, but one that definitely sounded relieved. The little droid hated being left alone. Hang on, Luke directed him. I'll get down and give you a hand. He jumped down. The ground felt a little squishy beneath his feet, but it was easily firm enough to support the X-Wing's weight. Satisfied, he reached out with the Force to lift R2 from his perch and lower the droid to the ground beside him, inserting the swamp around him, and wondering why exactly he'd come here. Back on Coruscant, it had seemed important, even vital, that he do so. But now that he was actually standing here, it all seemed hazy. Hazy, and more than a little silly. Beside him, R2 beeped questioningly. With an effort, Luke shook off the uncertainties. I thought Yoda might have left something behind that we could use, he told the droid, choosing the most easily verbalized of his reasons. The house should be... He glanced around to get his bearings. That way. Let's go. The distance wasn't great, but the trip took longer than Luke had anticipated. Partly it was the general terrain and vegetation. He'd forgotten just how difficult it was to get from one place to another through the Dagobah swamps. But there was something else, too. A low-level but persistent pressure at the back of his mind that seemed to press inward, clouding his ability to think. But at last they arrived, to find the house effectively gone. For a long minute, Luke just stood there, gazing at the mass of vegetation occupying the spot where the house had been, a freshly renewed sense of loss struggling against the embarrassing realization that he'd been a fool. Growing up in the deserts of Tatooine, where an abandoned structure could last for half a century or more, it had somehow never even occurred to him to consider what would happen to that same structure after 5 years in a swamp. Beside him, R2 twittered a question. "I thought Yoda might have left some tapes or books behind," Luke explained. "Something that would tell me more about the methods of Jedi training. Not much left, though, is there?" In response, R2 extended his little sensor plate. "Never mind," Luke told him, starting forward. "As long as we're here, I guess we might as well take a look." It took only a few minutes to cut a path through the bushes and vines with his lightsaber and to reach what was left of the house's outer walls. For the most part, they were rubble, reaching only to his waist at their highest, and covered with a crisscrossing of tiny vines. Inside was more vegetation, pushing up against and in some places through the old stone hearth. Half buried in the mud were Yoda's old iron pots, covered with a strange-looking moss. Behind him, R2 gave a quiet whistle. "No, I don't think we're going to find anything useful," Luke agreed, squatting down to pull one of the pots out of the ground. A small lizard darted out as he did so and disappeared into the reedy grass. "R2, see if you can find anything electronic around here, will you? I never saw him use anything like that, but..." He shrugged. The droid obediently raised his sensor plate again. Luke watched as it tracked back and forth, and suddenly stopped. "Find something?" Luke asked. R2 twittered excitedly, his dome swiveling to look back the way they'd come. "Back that way?" Luke frowned. He looked down at the debris around him. "Not here." R2 beeped again and turned around, rolling with some difficulty across the uneven surface. Pausing, he swiveled his dome back toward Luke and made a series of sounds that could only have been a question. "Okay, I'm coming," Luke sighed, forcing back the odd sense of dread that had suddenly seized him. "Lead the way." The sunlight filtering through the leafy canopy overhead had become noticeably dimmer by the time they came within sight of the X-Wing. "Now where?" Luke asked R2. "I hope you're not going to tell me that all you were picking up was our own ship." R2 swiveled his dome back around, trilling a decidedly indignant denial. His sensor plate turned slightly to point directly at the cave. Luke swallowed hard. "You're sure?" The droid trilled again. "You're sure?" Luke said. For a minute, he just looked across through the mists at the cave, indecision swirling through his mind. There was no genuine need for him to go in there, of that much he was certain. Whatever it was R2 had detected, it would not be anything Yoda had left behind. Not in there. But then, what was it? Leia had referred to a Bafashi dark Jedi who'd come here. Could it be something of his? Luke gritted his teeth. "Stay here, R2, he instructed the droid as he started to cross to the cave. "I'll be back as soon as I can." Fear and anger, Yoda had often warned him, were the slaves of the dark side. Vaguely, Luke wondered which side curiosity served. Up close, the tree straddling the cave looked as evil as he remembered it. Twisted, dark, and vaguely brooding, as if it was itself alive with the dark side of the Force. Perhaps it was. Luke couldn't tell for sure, not with the overwhelming emanations of the cave flooding his senses. It was clearly the source of the low-level pressure he'd felt ever since his arrival on Dagobah, and for a moment he wondered why the effect had never been this strong before. Perhaps because Yoda had always been here before, his presence shielding Luke from the true strength of the cave's power. But now Yoda was gone, and Luke was facing the cave alone. He took a deep breath. "I am a Jedi," he reminded himself firmly. Slipping his comlink from his belt, he thumbed it on. "R2, you copy?" The comlink trailed back. "Okay, I'm starting in. Give me a signal when I get close to whatever it is you're picking up." He got an affirmative-sounding beep. Returning the comlink to his belt, he drew his lightsaber. Taking another deep breath, he ducked under the gnarled tree roots and stepped into the cave. This, too, was as bad as he remembered it. Dark, dank, alive with skittering insects and slimy plants, it was generally as unpleasant a place as Luke had ever been in. The footing seemed more treacherous than it had been before. And twice in the first dozen steps, he nearly fell on his face as the ground gave way beneath his weight. Not badly, but enough to throw him off balance. Through the mists ahead, a well-remembered spot loomed, and he found himself gripping his lightsaber all the more tightly as he neared it. On this spot once, he'd fought a nightmare battle with a shadowy, unreal Darth Vader. He reached the place and stopped, fighting back the fear and memories. But this time, to his relief, nothing happened. No hissing breath came from the shadows. No Dark Lord glided forward to confront him. Nothing. Luke licked his lips and pulled the comlink off his belt. No, of course there would be nothing. He had already faced that crisis, had faced it and conquered it. With Vader redeemed and gone, the cave had nothing further to threaten him with except nameless and unreal fears. And those only if he allowed them to have power over him. He should have realized that from the start. "R2," he called. "You still there?" The little droid buzzed in reply. "All right," Luke said, starting forward again. "How far do I have to..." And right in the middle of his sentence, practically in the middle of a step, the haze of the cave abruptly coalesced around him into a flickering, surreal vision. He was on a small open-air ground vehicle, hovering low over some sort of pit. The ground itself was indistinct, but he could feel a terrible heat rising all around him from it. Something poked hard in his back, urging him forward onto a narrow board protruding horizontally from the vehicle's side. Luke caught his breath, the scene suddenly coming clear. He was back on Jabba the Hutt's skiff, being prepared for his execution in the great pit of Carcoon. Ahead, he could see the shape of Jabba's sail barge now, drifting a bit closer as the courtiers jostled one another for a better view of the coming spectacle. Many of the barge's details were indistinct through the dream mists, but he could see clearly the small, dome-topped figure of R2 at the top of the ship, awaiting Luke's signal. "I'm not going to play this game," Luke called out toward the vision. "I'm not. I've faced this crisis, too, and I've defeated it." But his words seemed dead even in his own ears. And even as he spoke them, he could feel the jab of the guard's spear in his back, and could feel himself drop off the end of the plank.
In midair, he twisted around, grabbing the end of the board and flipping high over the guards' heads. He landed and turned back toward the sail barge, hand extended for the lightsaber R2 had just sent arcing toward him. It never reached him. Even as he stood there waiting for it, the weapon changed direction, curving back toward the other end of the sail barge. Frantically, Luke reached out for it with the Force, but to no avail. The lightsaber continued its flight and came to rest in the hand of a slender woman standing alone at the top of the barge. Luke stared at her, a feeling of horror surging through him. In the mists, with the sun behind her, he could see no details of her face. But the lightsaber she now held aloft like a prize told him all he needed to know. She had the power of the Force, and had just condemned him and his friends to death. And as the spears pushed him again onto the plank, he heard, clearly, through the dream mists, her mocking laughter. "No," Luke shouted. And as suddenly as it had appeared, the vision vanished. He was back in the cave on Dagobah, his forehead and tunic soaked with sweat, a frantic electronic beeping coming from the comlink in his hand. He took a shuddering breath, squeezing his lightsaber hard to reassure himself that he did indeed still have it. "It's..." He worked moisture into a dry throat and tried again. "It's okay, R2, he reassured the droid. "I'm all right. He paused, fighting through the disorientation to try to remember what he was doing here. "Are you still picking up that electronic signal?" R2 beeped affirmatively. "Is it still ahead of me?" Another affirmative beep. "Okay," Luke said. Shifting the lightsaber in his hand, he wiped more of the sweat from his forehead and started cautiously forward, trying to watch all directions at once. But the cave had apparently done its worst. No more visions rose to challenge his way as he continued deeper in. And at last, R2 signaled that he was there. The device, once he'd finally pried it out of the mud and moss, was a distinct disappointment. A small, somewhat flattened cylinder, a little longer than his hand, with five triangular, rust and crusted keys on one side, and some flowing alien script engraved on the other. "This is it?" Luke asked. Not sure he liked the idea of having come all the way in here just for something so totally nondescript. "There's nothing else?" R2 beeped affirmatively and gave a whistle that could only be a question. "I don't know what it is," Luke told the droid. "Maybe you'll recognize it. Hang on, I'm coming out." The return trip was unpleasant, but also uneventful, and a short time later he emerged from under the tree roots with a sigh of relief into the relatively fresh air of the swamp. It had grown dark while he'd been inside, he noted to his mild surprise. That twisted vision of the past must have lasted longer than it had seemed. R2 had the X-Wing's landing lights on. The beams were visible as hazy cones in the air. Wading his way through the ground vegetation, Luke headed toward the X-Wing. R2 was waiting for him, beeping quietly to himself. The beeping became a relieved whistle as Luke came into the light, the little droid rocking back and forth like a nervous child. "Relax, R2, I'm all right," Luke assured him, squatting down and pulling the flattened cylinder out of his side pocket. "What do you think?" The droid chirped thoughtfully, his dome swiveling around to examine the object from a couple of different directions. Then, abruptly, the chirping exploded into an excited electronic jabbering. "What?" Luke asked, trying to read the flurry of sounds and wondering wryly why 3PO was never around when you needed him. "Slow down, R2. I can't..." "Never mind," he interrupted himself.
getting to his feet and glancing around in the gathering darkness. "I don't think there's any point in hanging around here anymore, anyway."
He looked back at the cave, now almost swallowed up by the deepening gloom, and shivered. No, there was no reason to stay, and at least one very good reason to leave. So much, he thought glumly, for finding any kind of enlightenment here. He should have known better. "Come on," he told the droid. "Let's get you back in your socket. You can tell me all about it on the way home."
R2's report on the cylinder was, it turned out, fairly short and decidedly negative. The little droid did not recognize the design, could not decipher its function from what his general-purpose scanners could pick up, and didn't even know what language the script on the side was written in, let alone what it said. Luke was beginning to wonder what all the droid's earlier excitement had been about, until the last sentence scrolled across his computer scope. "Lando?" Luke frowned, reading the sentence again. "I don't remember ever seeing Lando with anything like this." More words scrolled across the scope. "Yes, I realize I was busy at the time," Luke agreed, unconsciously flexing the fingers of his artificial right hand. "Getting fitted with a new hand will do that." So did he give it to General Madine, or was he just showing it to him? Another sentence appeared. "That's okay," Luke assured the droid. "I imagine you were busy, too." He looked into his rear display at the crescent of Dagobah growing ever smaller behind him. He had intended to go straight back to Coruscant and wait for Leia and Han to return from Bafash, but from what he'd heard, their mission there could run a couple of weeks, or even more. And Lando had invited him more than once to visit his new rare ore mining operation on the super-hot planet of M'Keon. "Chains in plans, R2, he announced, keying in a new course. "We're going to swing over to the Athiga system and see Lando. Maybe he can tell us what this thing is." And on the way, he'd have time to think about that disturbing dream, or vision, or whatever it was he'd had in the cave, and to decide whether it had been, in fact, nothing more than a dream.
Chapter 12. "No, I don't have a transit permit for Eden Keon," Han said patiently into the Falcon's transmitter, glaring across at the modified B-wing running beside them. "I also don't have any accounts here. I'm trying to reach Lando Calrissian." This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.